This is Sonic Gravity Corroboration. Now, up until about an hour ago, this episode was going to be entitled UFOs, UAPs, and the Plausibility of Sonic Gravity Insanity. And what I was going to do was melt your face and blow your mind with the notion that the things that everybody kind of dismisses as impossible or crazy might actually be plausible. Like lizard men and greys and the different kinds of aliens that we sort of hear about in like whispers and jokes and things. Because there was a 3-foot velociraptor-like dinosaur called Truon, whose brain was much bigger relative to its body than the mammals of that time that it's believed that humans evolved from. So in a world like ours, where a meteorite didn't strike 65 million years ago, that world would have been dominated by the Truodon, which means it's not just plausible, it's likely that there is a civilization of the Truodon progeny that has a 65 million year evolutionary head start on us, and that is a fact. And that stream of consciousness episode was going to reveal the strange series of events and the irony of my sobriety as a third-year law student triggered an unforeseeable chain of events whereby I actually showed up to take the bar-mandated legal ethics exam accidentally wasted. I was going to talk about my knick-knack allergy and my wife's knick-knack addiction. I was going to talk about how men go to the store to find the things they need to buy and women go to the store because they need to buy the things that they find. And I seriously can't wait to tell you all about my wife's vase that looks like it's made of bleached assholes. And that is a fact. But it's gonna have to wait. Because something happened today, and there was just some crazy corroboration from just random unexpected places that I just had to share because of how significant and how sort of fleeting this content would be in my mind. And I knew if I didn't make an episode with this content now, then I probably wasn't going to do it. And I thought it was really interesting, and so I'm dropping this one now, and we're going to do UFOs, UAP, and the Plausibility of Sonic Gravity Insanity, probably the end of the weekend, so we'll start your week off with a little comedy. And on the front end of that one will be an update on the VAG testing situation. So let's get started. So I subscribe to PBS Spacetime, and I am a patron of Dr. Matt O'Dowd's Patreon, and to his lectures about quantum physics are what I owe everything I think I know about quantum physics. And the subject was on a groundbreaking new model for modern theoretical physics. And you know what? It was exactly the sonic gravity critical thinking algorithm. And that is a fact. And Dr. Matt O'Dowd is legit. So when he says that this constructor theory of theoretical physics problem solving is actually the way of the future, then it corroborates the plausibility that the sonic gravity theory of everything might be the real deal. And that too is a fact. So here's what he said.
The people behind the greatest leaps in physics, like Einstein, Newton, Heisenberg, all had the uncanny ability to see the fundamentals, to see the deepest underlying facts about the world. And from simple statements about reality, they built up their incredible theories. Well, what if we had a recipe book for doing exactly this? One might be just around the corner. Pretty much all of physics can be boiled down to the following. Step one, describe some aspect of the universe with numbers, like the temperature, pressure, etc. of gas, or the position, velocity, etc. of a particle. Step two, come up with a set of equations that predict how those numbers change over time, e.g. the laws of thermodynamics or Newton's laws of motion. Step three, based on some initial state, a starting set of these numbers predict how the system will evolve at future times. And step four, profit, by building heat engines, airplanes, skyscrapers, and our entire modern world. In short, physics works by applying dynamical laws to some input state in order to predict an output state. We consider those laws to be true when these predictions match reality. This mechanistic approach to describing the world has been wildly successful. In fact, it's hard to imagine another way to do physics, except that In many ways, the mechanistic approach may have reached its limit. It's nice to have a set of equations for each separate aspect of the world, but if these theories are really true, then they should ultimately come together into some master theory. And they do, to an extent. You can derive all of thermodynamics and Newtonian mechanics and electromagnetism and so on from two master theories, quantum mechanics and Einstein's general relativity. But the master theory that unifies those last two has so far eluded us. For nearly a century, our greatest minds have been trying to come up with dynamical laws that describe all of nature, a mechanistic theory of everything, and they have failed. Some are starting to wonder if we need to rethink how we do physics at the fundamental level. One such approach is constructor theory. In the mechanistic approach, the fundamentals are the mathematical descriptions of how a process occurs. In constructor theory, the fundamentals are simpler. They are binary facts about whether or not a particular process is possible. It uses theories like general relativity and quantum mechanics, along with more fundamental conservation laws or principles, to rule out impossible output states given an input state of the system.
Yes. Now, did you hear that? Dr. Matt O'Dowd said that constructor theory begins with simple principles, like laws of physics, the things that we know that we know. And it involves binary analyses, which is exactly the sonic gravity critical thinking algorithm. We begin with a binary mutually exclusive analysis. And in the UFO UAP context, it starts with, it's either us or it ain't us. So if it is us, then it's either us from the past, us from the present, or us from the future. And I settled on us from the future, because us in the present are sitting here looking at those Tic Tacs going, what the fuck is that? And that is a fact. So without knowing it, 6 months ago, I invented constructor theory. And that is a fact. But I didn't think it was that fancy. I didn't think it was important. I didn't think that it was a really big deal. All it was the view of the universe in the eyes of a madman. And that, too, is a fact. And you heard him say, you heard Dr. Matt O'Dowd from PBS's Space Time say that simple laws in physics and simple binary analysis might be what it takes to unravel the secrets of the universe. And that, too, is a fact. And we'll see. Time will tell, but I'm hopeful that sonic gravity will be able to knock loose all this intellectual constipation. And I gotta be honest with you, I'm pretty hopeful. I think that sonic gravity could be the phenomenon, the decisive force in human history that unraveled all the mysteries in theoretical physics and decongested all the intellectual constipation in the field of theoretical physics. Can you imagine that? If we did that together, if we invented constructor theory, unraveled all the mysteries of theoretical physics, invented quantum flight, quantum propulsion, and unlimited quantum perpetual motion and infinite energy, you were right here, orbiting in sonic gravity, and personally responsible for carrying that message to the rest of the world. And that is a fact. And I owe a debt of gratitude to everybody on Twitter and all the different social media platforms that Sonic Gravity is on. I get a lot of hate, but I'm starting to get a lot of love. I'm getting a lot of encouragement, and the Sonic Tribe is definitely leaving me better than they found me. And without the Sonic Tribe, I'm not sure if I'd still be doing this, because it's a lot of work, and I don't make any money. It's just kind of a hobby. But there's energy here. I'm picking up steam, and I'm thinking in ways that I haven't, and I'm changing. I can feel the effect. When I close my eyes and I cycle and I start extracting reality from information and twisting it around and conceptualizing it to try to communicate it, it's forcing me to think in different ways. Ways that I didn't know. Things that I hadn't thought of before. And it's making me smarter. And let me tell you, my 10-year-old son Rex thinks his dad is fucking awesome. He told all his friends at school and showed him a bunch of singularity lab and the unidentified celebrity review phone home 2 episodes that Mike and Lou and Kristen graciously invited me to participate in. My little daughters Kuki and Bella, they're like, Daddy, when are you gonna build a spaceship? I want to fly in a spaceship. My nieces and my sons think it's awesome that I've been on YouTube. My wife Ashley is convinced that the badge is going to defy gravity, so she's looking and thinking about places we could move. So there's kind of a lot riding on this, but there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of good shit. There's a lot of good vibes coming out of Sonic Gravity for me, and that is a fact. So thanks. Thanks for your audience, your likes, follows, and comments on all the social media platforms. And I want you to know that I'm making these episodes because I want you to know that I'm in your orbit too. And I know that you're in my orbit whenever you make time to listen. In any case, it was really awesome to hear Dr. Matt O'Dowd on PBS's Space Time corroborate the Sonic Gravity critical thinking algorithm with something that's, you know, considered, you know, earth-breaking new theoretical physics, but it's really just Sonic Gravity critical thinking. But that corroboration is really significant because if real theoretical physicists are like, hey, this is the way maybe we should start doing stuff. And oh, by the way, you're just describing the nature of Sonic Gravity. And I think that tells us that we're on the right path. And that is a fact. But that's not the only thing that corroborated Sonic Gravity today. Singularity Mike, Kirsten Liu, rather, hosted Kurt Jaimungal on an episode of the Singularity Lab discussing physics, consciousness, and theories of everything. And that's really Kurt's thing, is theories of everything. And we got one. And my new Twitter bestie, John Rousseau, threw up a super chat and said, hey, man, you got to interview this guy, Brad, the host of Sonic Gravity. And Kurt was like, okay, we'll check it out. So thanks for doing me that solid, John. That was clutch. I'm pretty sure it's going to melt his face. And with any luck, he'll try and take a shot at the champ. But the really interesting thing, the most profound corroboration in the things that he said, and remember, this is completely independent of any of the earlier Sonic Gravity episodes. This guy's never even heard of Sonic Gravity. I never even heard of him. And so we're kind of two different free electrons just kind of zipping around. And I lifted some of the audio from tonight's Singularity Lab episode where Kurt started talking about what he thinks it's going to take to potentially arrive at a theory of everything in the future, because he doesn't know that we've already figured it out in the past, in our past, but it'll feel like his future. You know what I mean? And it's really amazing. He talks about how it probably won't be a specialist that sorts it all out. He talks about the importance of, I mean, essentially objectivity and not coming in with preconceived notions married to a certain kind of perception, which is kind of like exactly what happened with Sonic Gravity, right? We were here just exploring the nature of UAP flight, and we just kind of fell into the theory of everything. We didn't even care or think we were ever going to or ever want to or even consider thinking about, talking about, figuring out a theory of everything and unifying general relativity and quantum field theory. We just didn't give a shit about any of that, but we just kind of figured it out anyway. And that is a fact. And the craziest part was that he talked about the necessity of a Rosetta Stone. Listen.
If you have a worldview, so firstly, most people don't have, I certainly don't have a way of slotting in any facts. Second, I don't see the connections between those facts. Third, I don't have a metaphysic. And fourth, my model of reality doesn't comport with how I act. Now, if you have all four, I'd say you have a Weltanschauung.
And so, and this is fascinating because I love this. And I'm one of the things that I'm really interested in academia. I think one of the biggest problems that I see in academia is the dramatic over-specialization, which is fine, but there's really not any sort of context in between departments and fields. And so when I started thinking about a theory of everything before I actually knew what that meant, I always thought about human knowledge and our inability to contextualize human knowledge across multiple disciplines. Is this something that you think would be valuable in academia? And does that relate to your sort of yearning to have your own Weltanschauung?
Yeah, right. It's like they can't communicate with one another. I mean, they can, but it's difficult. So it's like what we need is a Rosetta Stone, like an intellectual Rosetta Stone, let's say, or a philosophical Rosetta Stone.
Right.
The problem is that as soon as one starts constructing one, the time that's spent constructing one, the fields would have moved and you would need to incorporate more. So it's one of the reasons why I don't think it's a terrible idea to be a jack of all trades and a master of none. It's one of the reasons I emphasize exploring so much on the channel, peregrinations or escapades, like just walking about. The reason why I do that is because for me to get caught up in the weeds, I wouldn't then be able to see the... Right now, I'm lucky enough that I can explore some field, and then it's getting quicker and quicker. The amount of time that it takes for me to grasp a new field is getting smaller and smaller because I'm exploring at a high level. I'm getting an overview. And right. I don't see this. Most people don't see this when they... Perhaps, Michael, when you watch the channel, like it looks like I'm persnickety and punctilious to like the nth degree. And there's a reason for that. I believe that when you're precise, that breeds truth. Or more specifically, it shows what's false. So there's a reason why I do that on air. But off air, it's much more exploratory. So perhaps what I'm doing is creating my own unconscious Rosetta Stone. And at some point, maybe I'll make it explicit.
Yes. And now that segment really resonated with me. It resonated with me because, number one, Kurt seems like a really smart guy. And he's talking about the importance of being a generalist, a jack of all trades and a master of none. For a couple reasons. I think one is to avoid this sort of siloization, but it's also to be able to kind of see the bigger picture and to not be rat-holed into the minutia of one particular sort of genre of thought or study, because to a hammer, everything's kind of a nail. And so it's important, I think, in his mind, or at least what I took from what he was saying, was that you have to be a generalist and you can't be kind of married to one particular perspective, or you can't be objective about the thing, about the thoughts that you're trying to assemble. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And the one thing that was really encouraging to me was that when I thought about it, I realized that I wasn't even trying to come up with a theory of everything when I came up with the sonic gravity theory of everything. All I was trying to do was figure out how Tic Tacs fly. That was all I really cared about. But then I just kind of, one afternoon, in about 3 hours, figured it all out. I kind of stepped on it. And I was like, hey, look what I found. The answers to all the mysteries in theoretical physics and the theory of everything. How about that? So I started podcasting about it. And I think part of the reason that no theoretical physicist could ever come up with it in the last 100 years was because everybody kind of has an idea and then tries to prove it. I don't think too many people just kind of go in with a spirit of self-discovery and exploration. I don't think that's the way academicians work. I think they all kind of come up with their own ideas and then work really, really hard to try and prove them. And the trouble is that's great if you landed on it and you're right. But so far everybody's been wrong and they're trying to prove they're right. And I think that's kind of why the big mysteries of theoretical physics have been hanging around for so long until now, obviously. And I think it also debunked the idea that in order to come up with all of the answers to theoretical physics in a few hours, you actually have to be a physicist. Because I just heard Kurt say that a military officer who's an engineer / lawyer / father / bipolar autistic psychopath with ADHD and PTSD might be the kind of guy to do it. But the thing that he said, the thing that struck me bigly, was that he was looking for a Rosetta Stone. And the Rosetta Stone is exactly the way that I figured it all out. Do you remember? Do you remember when I said it? Let me play it back for you from July 28th, 2021. From Critical Thinking Supremacy and the Sonic Gravity Theory of Everything. Everything is classical physics, but you just need to have essentially the Rosetta Stone. And the Rosetta Stone was the code that cracked Egyptian hieroglyphics, because it was a completely dead language. They had no idea, but in 196 BC, a bunch of Egyptian clergy were trying to politic with Ptolemy V, who's the king of Egypt at the time. You know, trying to tell him how great he was and all that kind of stuff. And so they made a tablet, and when they were like tooting his horn about it, they wrote it in 3 different languages: hieroglyphics, ancient Egyptian, and ancient Greek. And so all they had to do was find somebody who could speak Greek to translate. And that's how they cracked the code on hieroglyphics. So you gotta give credit to Dr. Jacob Bekenstein. He did this like really complicated black hole problem, and he like couldn't figure it out. And then he transformed it into a 2D surface area, and then like all the math worked out. And I was just thinking, and so when I started this, I was like, well, if it's good enough for Dr. Bekenstein, it's good enough for me. And I just started looking at everything like I was pretending that I was on the face of a black hole hologram. And everything just completely fell into place. I'm not even kidding. It really did. Anyway, so that's when I realized what dark matter was. And see, our particles, our mass, roll around like BBs on that spring. And if you do the math, over the whole circle that spiral goes is 4 times pi, which is 3.141516, right? And so it kind of goes on for a while, but that's about 12.5. That's about 12.5 ticks, and the hologram is only 1 tick thick. That's a black hole, so it's 2D, but it's been into a circle, and it's not totally straight shot through the bubble. And that's what I was trying to show on the podcast art. So we can only see it when it punches through the bubble we live on. And when it spins once, it spins 2 ticks on the hologram, plus a little change from the anomalous magnetic dipole moment. And thanks, Dr. Matt O'Dowd, for all those space-time lectures from PBS on your Patreon. Really appreciate it. So when you do the math on that, you find out that dark matter is 5.25 times more than the observable matter in the universe. And so that's why I was like, huh, maybe that's what Einstein was missing in his E equals mc squared equation. Maybe he didn't have all the matter that he needed to make the math work out right. So there you go. You have Kurt Jaimungal on the Singularity Lab talking about the necessity of a Rosetta Stone 3 months after I discovered the Rosetta Stone and podcasted about it. And reasonable minds can disagree, but what is irrefutable is that Kurt Jaimungal arrived at the same place that I did 3 months ago with the vision that the solution to the grand unification of quantum field theory and general relativity might only be revealed with the discovery of a Rosetta Stone to provide the perspective we need to properly visualize the universe as it is. And it reminded me of UFO disclosure supremacy, because in that episode I talk about the construction of the Voorhees anti-gravity engine, or the VAG, and I talked about how after I came up with the design, someone on Twitter sent me a photograph that was allegedly a component of a downed UFO. And when I looked at it, I knew right away exactly what that component did. I knew exactly how it worked. I knew exactly how it operated to reduce the mass of that craft. And if you take a look at the schematics of the VAG that I've posted, you can see exactly where it fits. And so it was just insane that I had come up with a design for an anti-gravity field, and then 2 weeks later, a component of my design from the future visited me. And that is a fact. But in a lot of ways, it's just a piece of corroboration. Those Tic Tacs absolutely fly masslessly. That is a fact. And intellectually, it's unnecessary to waste time discussing whether or not they're actually there. The only rational thing to do is to put our minds to the task of figuring out how they fly like that, which I did, I'm pretty sure. And so when you come up with a design like that, and then you see something allegedly from a crashed spacecraft, it corroborates the plausibility that your anti-gravity engine will function as an anti-gravity engine. And as I was listening to Singularity Mike interview Kurt Jaimungal on the Singularity Lab, everything that Kurt was saying made sense. And when everything that somebody like Kurt makes sense in the context of, say, the sonic gravity theory of everything, that's very strong corroboration. Because in order for the sonic gravity theory of everything to be sound, it has to be right. All the puzzle pieces have to fit. And so when you get somebody like Kurt, who is a physicist, who is super smart, and spends a lot of time interviewing people and thinking in very different terms than I do about this subject matter, and if we're arriving at the same place independently, that's very strong corroboration that we're both on the right track. And that is a fact. And I don't know, but I think Kurt was suggesting that he's persnickety and, you know, other big words that mean he gives people a hard time and asks hard questions to get to the bottom of stuff. And that's what I want, man. I want him to take a shot at the champ. I want him to cross me, and I guarantee that I am gonna walk in there, take the stand, and he's gonna take his best shot at the champ, and I'm gonna walk. And that is a fact. But the real irony is this. Like, I've seen Kurt talk, I've seen him field questions from, you know, really well-read people, which I am not. And that is a fact. And they're asking all kinds of questions, like the, you know, two-body problem or whatever, and like Nietzsche and shit. And I have no fucking idea about any of that bullshit. And that too was a fact. The thing is that's what I think enabled me to figure it all out. Because if it hasn't been figured out in 100 years, and everybody's busy recycling everybody else's thinking, then I think it's possible that everybody is inbreeding the same blind spots that everybody else is. And if everybody sort of measures their self-esteem and intelligence, by their ability to recall and regurgitate everything that everybody else has already thought of, then it's just kind of a self-licking ice cream cone, and nobody's actually gonna get anywhere that they haven't already been. Which probably isn't gonna do anything more than it's already done, which is to say that we shouldn't expect to get any further than we've already gotten if all we're doing is talking about everything that we already talked about to get ourselves here in the first place, and that is a fact. And the irony is that the reason that I was able to figure this out and nobody else was able to figure it out is because I haven't been intellectually inbred with either a preconceived notion or followed the intellectual paths that have been laid before everyone else who follows the work and teachings of the people who got us to where we are right now but haven't been able to get us any further. And that's not a bad thing, and I don't mean any disrespect, because the physicists who have come before us, who have gotten us this far, have absolutely shaped the world that we're in right now. But they have handed the torch, and so now it's on us to carry it further. And I don't think we're going to get very far if we're just recycling all the things that they thought of. We need original thought. And I think maybe that's why the Renaissance men like Leonardo and Michelangelo of the 1600s were such a intellectual boost, because they kind of dabbled in everything and they challenged the paradigms that existed at the time. And so when you listen to Sonic Gravity, yeah, you're viewing the universe through the eyes of a madman. And you're listening to somebody who just started teaching themselves quantum physics 4 or 5 months ago talk about quantum physics. But sometimes it's the diversity, the intellectual diversity of not knowing anything that everybody else knows, so that you're viewing the universe through a different perspective that creates insight that nobody's thought of or seen before. So it's possible that viewing the universe through the eyes of a madman was, from the beginning of time, what it was going to take to learn how to fly Tic Tacs and develop the grand unification and the theory of everything. And that is a fact.